This is the Bold and Inspired Leaders podcast. Through candid conversations, this series reveals the mindset, struggles, and triumphs that define impactful leadership today. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Amber. Join us for conversations with those who make bold moves and lead inspired lives. Let's dive in.
Welcome, Tani Browning. Thank you for joining us.
I'm really happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, we met you, I think it was about a year ago when your husband was on one of our clients' podcasts, and Amber and I got the chance to just chat with you. And I was just telling her this morning, we got like big sister vibes right away, and then found out more about you and some of the work that you do and thought, wow, that's really inspiring, which is perfect for our podcast. So we really wanted to share with our audience some of your story. And I know that's not, it's never comfortable for anybody to talk about their own story, especially when you're someone who just naturally is outward expressing, you know, towards other people. And you're more, it seems like you're more about other people's stories than you are your own. Would that be?
Well, they're way more interesting. I mean, I guess I came from a family of six. There's six of us and I'm number two. So there's, you know, I was always helping my siblings. And then, you know, when I got into this community, it's just so many stories. Everyone has a story and so many that we could never even share. And so many that they didn't want to share, you know, that are tucked inside their own little hearts. But everyone had a story.
Yeah.
So
speaking of the community that you found yourself a part of, take us back to that first moment. If there was a first moment, or was it a progression over time where you did become a part of this community?
Well, we were actually meeting with a producer, my husband and I, over some other work that she had contacted him about. And she kept talking about a show that she was struggling with. And she's a woman of color, a beautiful woman of color, and she was struggling getting into these closed secret society, these Mormon fundamentalist groups, as one would be in a racist society such as that.
Yeah.
So yeah, we just started talking about it and I said, I think I can help you. But I had no idea how difficult that really was. It sounded like, oh yeah, well, I'll help you. I understand the community a little bit and with my own background and, you know, we'll just do this together. And it was a lot deeper and a lot more time consuming and a lot more intense than I had ever imagined.
Yeah. And actually you just mentioned your own background. And I think we kind of forget that, you know, that might've been internally a little bit of the connection point for you. Like you said, you grew up in the Mormon church, right?
Yeah. And I grew up a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. But we never talked about polygamy. I mean, maybe on Pioneer Day or something that was like July 24th, we would talk about it, but we never talked about it. So it wasn't something that I was super familiar with.
Yeah.
I always did struggle with it inside whenever it was talked about, but not something that was mainstream talked about, at least we're, you know, here in the Valley very much.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just mentioning how I went to Mesa High and a ton of my friends were Mormon, and like all I saw around me was good values and tight-knit families and big families, lots of siblings.
Yes. And I have five of my own and that kind of thing too. And we never talked about it in, you know, with those children, with our children either. It wasn't, like I said, when we did, I struggled with it, mm-hmm. but it just wasn't a part of the mainstream.
Tani, when you first started, you said you didn't know what this would turn into. Was there a moment that you were in this work and you realized this is the moment that I cannot walk away from this, even though it's so much bigger than I ever thought it would be?
Well, that wonderful producer that I was working with, she got me hired as an investigative producer. So I was just supposed to be on for a week. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, the more I saw, the more the work
I saw. What is an investigative producer?
I don't know. We just, that's something that we decided. I ended up being the supervising producer. But yes, we called it an investigative producer because I knew from my husband's work kind of how to set this up. I thought we'd go about it in a community policing type way where we get into the community, we talk to the people, you know, that are doing the work. And oh my gosh, it was just so much more than I ever expected. I thought that we could go to the people on top that were doing the work and we'd all say, hey, look, this is what we want to do. Kumbaya, let's do this. And I found that the whole community was very territorial and tribal. And I just thought we'd all, you know, many hands make light work, like yeah. My grandma used to say. And that's just not what happened.
So not only are you challenged by what you're facing, because you're facing these stories of these, of some of these women, especially much younger girls, right? But now you're, it's like you're having a fight to help.
Yeah, it was, that's a whole bizarre whatever phenomena all itself. But what, that was such a blessing, because then I had to go deep into the community to actually talk to people. And that's where the stories were, where every, just the everyday people that were going through what they were going through. And that's, that was a blessing. So, and it actually made, you know, if there was a threat or anything, even more so, because I probably talked to, you know, at least 1,000, you know, interviewed or informally, informally. I mean, there are so many more people that I talked to than we actually filmed with.
And what were you finding with these conversations? What were you looking to find? And then what were you finding that was a surprise maybe?
There's two really shocking phenomena that I found, especially in the Kingston, the sexual abuse. I hadn't talked to one girl, one woman that hadn't been sexually abused. And one woman that I talked to said that she had not been sexually abused, but then she told me stories about how her uncle would watch her take showers. Mm. And so they didn't even know what sexual abuse is. I had some say, what is rape? And I actually had to go look up what rape was to explain it, because I just thought that was something that we all knew.
Yeah.
And it, so that was shocking, just absolutely shocking how rampant the sexual abuse is. And then the other thing is that the lack of help, that the lack of, naively, I'm embarrassed to say this, I thought, oh, you guys just don't know how to work the system. You grew up in this closed society, so you, maybe you just need someone to help you work, you know, through some of this stuff. But then when I would make the phone calls and I knew the system and I still couldn't get anyone to listen, that was shocking.
Wow. So what kind of phone calls were you making?
Well, we had one girl, so I hadn't been on very long at all. And we got a phone call from a sister that said, my little sister is in danger. She was 14 years old and she's trying to leave and she couldn't get anyone to listen. And she'd called the cops so many times that they started saying that she was harassing the police. Oh, I mean, wow. It was just a nightmare. But when so we were trying to work with her, and those are some of the phone calls I called DCFS and things like that. And one of the women came back on and said, is this a polygamy related situation? And I said, yes. And then I was getting somewhere, I thought, until they found out it was polygamy related. And I'm like, wow. What is happening? But this young girl, and it's hard, she ended up taking her own life at 14 because she just didn't know any way out. And she kept getting sent back into the abuse. So it was then where I had a 12-year-old, I thought, how can I unsee what I know now? Mm-hmm. And if I know something, I've got to do something.
Yeah, that'll do it. That'll definitely do it.
Can you give everybody a little basic information on the mindset behind polygamy? I think we all maybe have a general understanding of it, but if you explain this to somebody for the first time, we talk about these women being trapped and being controlled, but how does this happen? Is this just in certain cultures, religious cultures?
What, polygamy?
Yes.
I mean, it's happening everywhere. I didn't really, until I did the work, I didn't realize that. I thought it was just Mormon fundamentalism, but it's not. We've got like the new Nawabians that are doing polygamy. Koresh was engaging in polygamy. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like when you have a powerful patriarchal society like that, it seems to breed itself. And then as the more women come in, the more wives, then we go younger and younger and younger. It seems to be a pattern.
Wow. And what's the connectivity then to the faith? What's the reasoning that they tell these women?
Well, that is based in Mormon fundamentalism for sure. They're saying that I need three wives in order to get to the celestial kingdom, to get to the highest kingdom of glory.
Oh,
so okay. That's for sure. And that it's your job to help, you know, in order for you to have your salvation, you have to participate as well. So here we go with a basic, maybe dysfunctional male, sorry, males out there. I have four boys. I love men, but I just, you know, a dysfunctional, maybe a male thing, or maybe a human problem. And we've turned it into something much, we put religion into it. So we've supercharged anything that's going,
right.
You know, it's going to be like a human instinct.
And so a lot of your work then has been with the women who've been victims of this, but you've also had conversations with some of the men.
Oh, so many men. And the ones that will talk to you are, you know, they're like, this sucks. You know, some of them will talk about, you know, having one woman was enough. And I really loved this one woman. And yet I had to keep having more wives. They'll tell you about that. And the men that have come out that, you know, they haven't really allowed me to use some of the one I'm talking about now. I'm not really allowed to use his name. But he would talk about the activity and things, his mindset. And what it took to unravel that mindset of the indoctrination that he knew as a kid.
So let's dive right back into that on some of your thoughts on what is polygamy.
I really have no problem with what people want to do in their bedroom. I'm more of a, you know, live and let live, do your thing, get your freak on. But I really feel like being in the community for so long, I feel like, you know, polygamy is really a breeding ground for pedophilia. So not every polygamous man is a pedophile. I'm just saying that the community can breed that.
Yeah. And so it's a way to cloak that behavior for those who are pedophiles.
Well, it's happening so much. So the sexual abuse is, like I said, rampant. And there's no way, I mean, I don't know that there's any stats on that kind of thing, but if you ask anyone in the community that's going to talk to you, they will tell you.
It must be hard. It must be hard that there's no statistics on this because it's also secretive. I think that's why someone like you say, I don't think people realize how big of an issue this is because people aren't reporting on it, not at mass scale, because it's such a secretive thing within these communities.
I feel like we're getting closer and closer and closer to getting some of it. I think it's being taken much more seriously because, you know, it's like, it's just TV, Tawny. No, it's TV. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like some of the work that the people way before we ever got there, you know, had set some of the groundwork. And then I feel like we were able to build upon that, you know, on the backs of giants. And I feel like people have built upon our work as well. And I think we're getting there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think you kind of hear, and it's some of the stuff that the realizations that we have when we watch Justin's podcast, because you had a certain perception of something, or maybe you never even really put that much thought into it because it's not in your immediate life. But when you watch a show like that, if it's a good show and they're really focusing on the truth and of what's going on, it's very, very eye-opening.
Well, and we were just like, you know, like Sister Wives, I hope, can we say that? Mm-hmm. We were watching a lot of that and it was glorifying what was happening. That's not what I was seeing on the street. You know, that's not what I was seeing in these communities. It was nothing like that. I'm not saying that doesn't happen. I didn't see it.
Yeah, I haven't watched Sister Wives.
Me neither. I'm not interested. I understand the basic premise is that it's all okay and we're all okay with this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was the idea.
Yeah. To each his own.
And, yeah. We all feel that way, that it's each their own. Mm-hmm. However, it's the women and the children and the men. I mean, we did have some of the guys leave as well. It's difficult. It's a difficult, systematic abuse, and it's problematic.
And they start so young with this indoctrination.
It's indoctrination. People say it's brainwashing, but, you know, it's conditioning. Mm-hmm. If you don't know anything different at all, it's not like they're 30 and then decided to join a cult.
Yeah.
They were born into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I have a lot, even the ones that are hard for me to reconcile with what they have done, I still have empathy for that, because if this is your husband and prophet or your father and prophet, how do you say no to what is actually your ultimate authority?
Yeah. And what happens before he becomes the husband? Is it that are the parents involved in getting their daughter married to I'm sure it happens.
They don't have a choice. I mean, they have a choice. I guess they always say it's girl's choice. It's always girl's choice. But if you say no, you're going to be ostracized from the community and you're not going to get, you know, any kind of special attention. And really, you may even be kicked out of the community for saying no to the prophet. So it's not like they had a choice.
So this 14-year-old girl or any of the girls that are around that age, their parents are just saying, yeah, this is great. This is wonderful.
How it is.
And she can't go back to them and say, hey, it's not what you think. I'm being abused. I'm miserable.
Well, on Escaping Polygamy, one of the slogans was, there is a way out. And it came a lot because of what we were seeing. There is a way out, you guys. There is a way out. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of what we hope that people would say. There is a way out. You may not be able to go to your prophet. You may not be able to go to your parents, but there is a way out.
Wow.
And we found, it was crazy, one of the things I loved so much is that, and this is naughty of me, I guess, I call it polygamy porn. We found that they were getting together and watching the show in basements, you know, secretly. Wow. And that was so exciting. Yeah. And by the time we ended filming, we had actually, we had kids that were making packs to get out instead of packs to commit suicide.
Yeah. So it was galvanizing a community.
Oh, it was crazy. And then even in like the Crick, I would get like, they would say, we want to see it, but there's no way to see the show. So I would get old school DVDs that I would, that we didn't have anything, no stickers on them, nothing, and give them out, and they would hide them in their underwear drawers. Wow. And watch it. So, or they'd knock on my hotel room and say, can we watch this? And that was crazy too. Crazy fun.
Wow.
To have the girls, you know, scary a little bit, like, you know, I'm here, but.
But showing
crazy,
them with their own eyes that there is a way
to do
out.
Some of that. They would bring food. I mean, you girls know who I'm talking about right now. I mean, the girls that mm-hmm. came. Yeah. And they would say, we have a big surprise this particular time I'm talking about. And they came without their FLDS dresses on. And that was their big surprise for me.
Oh, wow.
So fun.
Wow.
Such cuties.
So anyone that knows you knows that you never talk about this work without talking about the entire community. You're part of a community. You definitely don't do all of this yourself.
Oh, no.
But we do have to talk about the weight of the work on you because of how intense this is. You, by your own admission in the beginning, said this was a lot more than I ever thought it was going to be. How have you taken care of you? Your first priority is your family. How have you taken care of you throughout this entire process?
Well, I'm really glad that you mentioned that it's an entire community because no one is an expert or does anything in this community. You know, the only experts, the only ones that really know what's going on are the ones that lived it. And I think that's just so important for people to understand. I guess I don't want to answer your question because I'm not sure that I did. Mm. I'm not really sure that I did. When the, you know, the alarm bells came whenever my children would say, are you coming home? Or, you know, that kind of stuff. That's when I would get into a cocoon a little bit and, you know, try to protect my own. Because that's all that mattered, really. At the end of the day, if I haven't done something right with my own children, it doesn't matter what I've done out here. Because those are what I was entrusted with to mm-hmm. take care of.
Mm-hmm. Well, the good news is we have your husband right over here, and I'm sure if there's anything you don't say, he'd be happy to come up here and talk about what a good job you did.
Oh, that's a proud face over there.
Yeah, as a wife and as a mother.
Well, it mattered. They all mattered to me very, very much, and I knew what they were coming out of, and I really, like, I was trying to tell, like, network execs and people, and they were actually really great to listen, but it was like, you can't just have them crawl out their window and slap them on the ass and say, hey, have a good night, have a good life. Mm-hmm. Go make this happen.
Can we talk about trauma? Because you talked about this in our call last week. I'd never heard the term, but I think it's exactly what you're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, because I was saying this is polygamy family drama. And then I went, oh, and I said it was caused from trauma. And I'm like, oh, it's trauma. Mm-hmm. And we all understand that. Yeah, there's a lot of drama that goes on within the community. They're babies. They're coming out into a world that they were never raised to be in. And they're refugees, literal refugees. They look like Americans, but they don't even know the laws of our land, half of them. So it's just, there's just a lot. And there's so much trauma that they came from. Some of the abuse in the Kingstons, we didn't even say half of it. It is unfathomable. Some of that abuse. And I guess I don't want to, in FLDS as well, just unbelievable abuse.
Wow. I know, you know, with child abuse, especially, you know, when it's coming from the parents, that distorts the person's view of love drastically. And so this is almost, I don't even know how this.
I keep talking about the Kingstons because there's different sects of fundamentalists. So, and I keep going back to the Kingstons, but they don't even call their fathers by their real name. I mean, by father or dad or anything like that. They all say Paul or Daniel. They're so disconnected from that parental figure.
Wow, because so, the husband is now the authority, right? And so the
well, Paul removing- has over 300 children that we know of. Daniel, almost 200. I mean, so that's a lot of kids. So those become commodities more than they do, you know, these loving relationships. It's a lot of kids.
Wow.
Wow.
I can't even fathom. I don't even know where to go with that. With 300 kids.
And I still struggle with the ages that this starts happening.
Yeah.
We're talking, these are babies. Mm-hmm. These are just little girls where this starts happening.
So can you imagine being 14 and like lashing out at the system a little bit and just, there's just no help. You're 14. Mm-hmm. I just can't even imagine. And what kind of courage it takes to at 14, 15, 16 to say, I want out. Mm-hmm.
I think something a lot of people would ask right now is what is law enforcement's position on this? If it's something that's illegal and someone picks up the phone and says, I was at school the other day and my girlfriend at school told me that this is what's happening at home, what's law enforcement's position on that? Is it because it's illegal, right?
Well, it's it's not complicated. Right now, it's a misdemeanor. In Utah, it's a misdemeanor. So I think the rest of the 49 states, it's a felony, right, Matt? Is it a felony still? It's a mess. Like my husband thinks like I think it's $750 fine in Utah. So it's like, but my husband's call to action on that is like, we'll keep pulling them over. Let's keep giving them a $750 fine. That's going to start hurting at some point.
That must be infuriating for you in the community, though, trying to do the work.
Well, okay. And I keep talking about my husband, but his thing is take polygamy out of it. We have crimes. Mm-hmm. Let's go ahead and focus on these crimes. And the IRS recently did. This is while we were in the community for a while, too. The Kingstons were found guilty of $500 million fraud against the government, and young children were a part of that. So we're opening up our eyes to some of this. But when I was there, like I said, the first thing I wanted to do was go talk to the law enforcement officer that was over polygamy.
Yeah. There wasn't one?
There wasn't one. Wow. And that was shocking because of my, being in a law enforcement family and things. I just thought there would be someone over polygamy. And what we found and wondered, at least, was a lot of corruption. Wow. And people might have been being bought off. And that's what the community believes, at least.
Wow.
He's over there laughing because I'm being very careful to say allegedly, but yeah.
Yeah. Do you think it's important then that it actually gets, it's made illegal? Do you think that's a part of the fight right now?
Well, it was illegal.
I should say criminally illegal, beyond a misdemeanor.
Yeah, criminally illegal. It's just, there's just so many, what do you do with the children? What do you do, with if everybody that's practicing polygamy is going to jail? I don't know. There's so many ways of thinking on that. Mm. I think it should be illegal. Mm-hmm. I think that some of the girls that actually got out, when they found out that polygamy was illegal, that's when they knew they had power. Because then they knew that, what my dad's doing is illegal. So they had power. So if the women, I really believe if the women would just stand up, and they have, because the women that have stood up, they're the ones that make the biggest difference in the communities because they know what's going on too. And they don't have to be subjugated by religion, men, or, religious doctrine.
One of the things that I often wonder, I've wondered, with your husband too, with what he does, when people take on issues that are just so big and there's so much of it. You guys wrote a book called Hate Next Door. There's a lot of it out there. How do you, does there ever come a point where you're like, we're not going to make a dent in this, Have you ever thought that?
Sure.
Worried about that?
Of course, you think that kind of thing because hate's been around since Adam and Eve. And so is probably polygamy, mm-hmm. at some level. And religion has been used to do man's work. As beautiful as people think or might not think it is, it has been twisted to do man's work through all time. So Yeah, I mean, I guess. But there's been people that have stood up for the equal amount of time to try to do the right thing. And if we're not actively trying to make the world better, all of us, then where are we going to be?
Yeah.
What if we don't? Mm-hmm. I mean, what if you guys don't do this podcast and bring things to light and that kind of thing? What if you don't do what you're uniquely capable of doing? Mm-hmm. Then I think we're in a really bad place.
Yeah, because that's the only voice out there is the hateful one. And so we have to be spreading love, not to be cheesy, but you know.
Yeah, I've definitely been told that. Like, you cannot simplify it and make it that easy. And I'm like, that simple. So I had to change my verbiage to care. We have to care about each other. Mm-hmm. But that's just love.
Yeah.
That's just love.
Exactly. Yeah.
One of my old mentors, he would always say, if not us, then who? Mm-hmm. If not now, then when? And I feel like that's a big part of your mentality is...
Well, I used to say that to Matt when he would come home and be really discouraged and probably needed more sleep and, you know, resources and things like that. I would say, if not you, who? Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that was, and I meant it. Because mm-hmm. if not you, who's going to do it? Mm-hmm. If not us, who?
Yeah. Yeah. And there's definitely, there's a lot of, you know, we talked about trauma drama. I think, you know, there's a lot of people out there who've been through things and maybe they aren't healed from it. So they don't have that part of their soul kind of opened up to be able to be pouring love out. And then there are others who do, you know, so that.
Just yesterday, I was talking to a girl a woman from the community. And she said, it's brave to go into this community because it is dangerous. And it's not dangerous like they're going to shoot us dead dangerous, but it is dangerous. And she said, you're coming into a community. This is so powerful to me, where we're doing the best with the way our brains were trained. So, and I think, are we all trying to do the best with mm-hmm. the way our brains were trained? And we're just at different levels trying to figure this out.
Mm. How did you meet Rachel Jeffs?
How did I called her. Like, I met one of her friends, said, you know, Rachel would probably talk to you. And so I just called her on my way from Southern Utah into Salt Lake City. And when my phone started going out of range, I just pulled over. And we sat there on the phone while I was for 3 hours to where the cops came and said, are you okay? You know, so we just kind of hit it off and just talked and talked and talked. So that's how I met her. And then actually Matt and I, my husband and I flew up to meet her and her, the guy she was dating at the time, well, her husband. So we flew up to meet them and her soon to be husband.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you think about her story and her story, how much is that... Has it helped get credibility or interest or, you know, people, because a lot of people know Warren Jeffs, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. They can sort of put a face to the name. How has that helped the work? Or are you just saying, you know what, she's just another person in the community that's working on this?
We, and I'm going to just backtrack just a little bit. We started in the Kingston community and then we took it down south and, you know, got into the FLDS community. And Escaping Polygamy, the first girl to ever leave on camera that we know of, at least, you know, actual, not reenactment, you know, happened on our show. Wow. So that is pioneering, and that the courage that it took for those women to do, girls, women to do what they did is, I just can't say enough. So from there, you know, then I met Rachel. I just don't want, because Rachel's a great big name, mm-hmm, and Warren Jeff's daughter and that kind of things, but all of these stories, yeah, are equally as powerful. But Rachel is very special because she wants to heal the community. When the first time I met her in person, she said she had already started writing her book. And the very first thing in her book was a letter to the community. She wanted to undo her father's wrongs. She wanted to heal the community. She wanted them to know what her father really was.
Did you?
That's powerful.
Do you remember the name of her book?
Yeah, she wrote Breaking Free.
Okay.
So she did, yeah. It was published in 2007, shortly after she left. And it's a good read.
Okay.
If you really want to know what was happening, mm-hmm, and she's now working, we're actually collaborating on a book right now, and it's more about the healing journey. That was her journey out, and now she's taking it, you know, one step further.
I was just going to ask you that. What happens with these girls after they come out? What kind of journey are they on from there?
everyone is on their own journey. And I love what Rachel says. She said, we need to have a big cloak of charity around all of us because we're all just babies learning how to do this life. So they are. What was the question?
Just what happens with them once they're out? And
there's so many things. Like, it's like you can, this is really difficult because we say, hey, you're going to be free. You're going to be out. The rest of us out here say, it's going to be so great. You know, free, but freedom isn't free, and freedom's hard, and this life is hard. And so they're experiencing everything that all of us have, mm-hmm. except for they're starting, you know, where we start in kindergarten, having little love affairs with our, you know, the little boys or girls mm-hmm. at our desks, and we're going to get married. We're going to, you know, have a family, and we're playing house. Well, they're coming out at 18, 40 mm-hmm. with fully functioning bodies and that still have that mentality. So we need to all give them a cloak of charity as they try to figure this all out.
Yeah.
And they're dealing with their trauma.
So the community really kind of takes them in as a daughter, as a sister, as in whatever they need and kind of help them get on their feet.
Yes. And I had one.
Alone.
Yeah. And it, but it starts before they get out. Like I had one, I guess, I hope it's okay to tell a story, but I had one girl come out of Costco and some outsider comes over there and starts rifling through her groceries. She has her dress on. She's full on FLDS. She's rifling through and my girl, I call her my girl. She looks at her and like, what are you doing? And she says, I just want to see what my tax dollars are paying for. And as quick as that, she said, I didn't know whores paid taxes. So these are the women that we're dealing with. You know, they are sharp and great and amazing and tough as can be. And be their friend. Hey, how are you doing? You know, I didn't know whores paid taxes. I mean, shocking, right? Shocking. So it starts way they're taught that outsiders are terrible people. Mm. That day that woman showed that we were.
Right.
But mm-hmm. but if we're actually kind and good and gracious, they're not going to be afraid when it's time to get out.
Yeah. It must be incredibly scary to be out in a world that you don't know, that everyone thinks you know, that everyone just assumes you know.
Yes.
And that you have now been stripped of your identity and your tribe. Like, I feel like that's all of what makes us as a society.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's like we've got to be so kind, so much grace towards, you know, there's a lot of mistakes that are made. Some kids will come out and do a lot of drugs and things like that because they think that's what outsiders do, that's mm-hmm. what the outside world is about. Oh. Or lots of, you know, crazy destructive sex, I should say. You know, do your thing, but you know, just destructive behaviors that probably aren't going to get them where they want to go.
Yeah.
Because I think that's what the outside world is about.
Yeah. Tani, when women are ready to tell their story or ready to break free, what seems to be the hardest part for them in telling their story?
That they're going to go to hell. They actually have to get to the point that they don't mind if they're going to go to hell. You know, there's a song that we used to play all the time, and it's called Staying is Worse Than Leaving. It's a breakup song, but there was just, they would start listening to outside music and things, and they would relate to some of these things. And they had to realize staying is worse than leaving, and going to hell is better than staying.
Wow.
I don't even know how to respond to that.
that is
incredibly difficult to try to even comprehend. That is the choice.
But it's not unique. It really is not a unique choice. We could probably have 10 women, men here, and they would probably, at least 80% would say that they felt that way.
Mm-hmm. In whatever situation they're in.
Yeah.
Yeah, they feel stuck.
Yep.
Wow.
I choose hell over staying here. And that, it's a rare person. I mean, really, statistically, it's not your everyday person that can make that choice. So the ones that have actually left, every single one of them are heroes to me.
Mm-hmm. When you see the effect of your work, is there one person, one story that stands out to you that is the one story that you hang your hope on when days are really difficult?
That's a great question. I think that suicide pact thing, knowing that they're making pacts to get out, you know, that has nothing to do with the production company or anything else, just that their own will to get out. I think that just, that's more of a collective thing. That just really moves me, because then, okay, my work is done. I'm good. Let someone else can go ahead and take over and do that. Our work is done.
And they're initiating the change themselves, right? Yeah. The greatest change makers talk about, I'm not the one who's initiating the change. I'm the one who's presenting a new idea. I'm the one who's, again, giving another option. But it's really the person that then can make a change and then affect the lives of so many others by the decision that they've made to make the change.
And the women that I've left that were on the show that have been doing the work, you know, they're the ones that really showed, hey, you can do this. Without them, there is no story. Without them being brave enough to share their story, there was nothing that we'd ever should be able to show. And I used to say that to them when I'd interview them. They're like, well, what, you know, and they didn't know what to say. I'm like, well, I know what I would say, but no one wants to hear what I have to say, you know, because I didn't grow up in this polygamy. I didn't grow up in this mess, and we want to know what you think. Mm-hmm. And so when they were empowered to actually say their truth, gosh, powerful stuff.
What was one of the most powerful things that you heard, if you can recall?
Well, one girl was crying, and I'm like, what is wrong? You're making us look at shit that we don't want to look at. And I'm like, well, you're being super hostile, and you don't have to talk about anything you don't want to talk about. This is, you know, your thing. But she said, but I want to look at it. Mm-hmm. And so that, I mean, it's just, it was like therapeutic in a world that they weren't ever going to seek therapy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to recount to others what you've been through when you've been through something really hard and traumatic, and because you get a physical response to it, you know, you can't just speak about things as if it was someone else's experience. If you can, you're either very, very healed or you are still very, very much needing to be healed.
And I'm so proud of the girls that actually would. I mean, so many have gotten therapy because that's so against the religion. Like that if you need emotional or therapeutic help, then you have demons inside of you. So it's like so. And the thought about law enforcement, if you're going to talk to the media or law enforcement, that is like not okay. So some of these, to look at what they're actually having to walk through to be healthy, to get out, is incredible. I don't think we understand the depth of that. Well, I didn't.
It's a very evil, intentional indoctrination or brainwashing or whatever you want to call it. I mean, it seems like they've covered all their bases, haven't they?
Yeah, and it's not their first rodeo. Mm-hmm. You know, they know exactly what they're doing because they've had generations to kind of hone that in. Mm-hmm. So many of the girls, especially like in the Kingstons, they'll marry them at 15, 16, because then they can, for lack of a better word, trap them. They're trapped. But no one's trapped. There's always a way out.
Absolutely.
Since you started doing the work, and now today, fast forward, we have phones and social media. I have to assume that's not allowed.
Well,
But has that impacted? Has that been able to infiltrate and spread the message a little bit more? Or are these groups just so closed off from society and internet and social media that they can still keep it rather this mindset contained?
So super great question. So when we started, they were actually the FLDS actually had a tech guy go in and take the internet off the phones, so they could have phones and they could even have the video capabilities and things like that, but they could not get on the internet. Well, that changed. I mean, technology changed so fast. I started in 2014. I watched that change. And then in 2020, when everybody was forced inside and school, everything was on the internet, it blew up. And that's when we've seen so many people leave as well.
Wow.
So it was like for that community, it kind of dismantled so much of it because they could see what was going on outside in the outside. Just like any kid, you're supposed to be doing your homework. You're on Instagram, you know, whatever. They were sneaking that kind of thing.
Wow.
But when I started, it was so insular, really. It was so no text messages, nothing. You know, it was just crazy. We'd have to sneak phones in and things like that. So there is still so much tech going on, though. The Kingstons and they really do keep a tab on on the phones and things like that.
How so? They just track what they're doing on them?
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot that I can, like, allegedly, they're tracking everybody where they're going. They're putting trackers on their car. You know, they know. It's an insular community. It's not, there's a reason they call them a closed secret society. It's not like they know what they're doing. So I still, just yesterday I talked to a girl, she's like, and she's out. And she's like, I don't trust these phones. And I'm like, well, okay, well, how do you want to communicate? You know? So she just said, I guess we'll just talk.
Wow.
But she's still mm-hmm. struggling with that.
Wow. How many times did we say wow?
I know.
Well,
I know.
It's hard to comprehend. Like when the 2020 came, and even before, Warren Jeffs had denounced his prophecy, being a prophet, and that was going around the internet. So a lot of the kids would look and watch that as well. And it helped them get out. So the technology really did help so many get out and to see the truth and unravel just this much so that they could start, you know, asking questions.
And isn't some of this stuff happening, like, right here in Arizona?
Well, we just, like, I'm glad you asked that because, like, the Sam Bateman case, that was just adjudicated just, like, within the last couple months. And Sam was like a break off of the FLDS. He said that Warren Jeffs made him the prophet. So we have this leadership vacuum and people just saying, hey, I'm the new prophet. But that, I mean, there's a whole different level of evil with that because he was taking 9-year-old brides. And I knew of the 1 9-year-old bride. I didn't know there was 2. And that's just, we have to protect our children. So whatever people are doing in their bedrooms, like I said, go do your thing. But when we have crimes against children at that level, it is all of our responsibility to rise up and say, no, not here. Mm-hmm. No way. And there are heroes in that story as well. Like Faith Beislein, she was, you know, knocking on the doors, trying to tell people this is going on. And the level that she went to like take care of her family, there are heroes all over the place every single day in this community trying to do the right thing. And we all need to rise up where we're uniquely able.
Yeah. And I feel like when there's something we don't understand as a society, we're very quick to judge. I was on a road trip and I had pulled over to let my dog out and toss the ball in the river for him. I was driving to Colorado and I saw another family had pulled over to do the same thing and they caught my attention by what they were wearing. It stood out. It was like something from back from 100 years ago. And then I realized that there was one man and there was multiple young women. And I remember being very uncomfortable because I didn't understand what it was. And they, when they saw me, quickly gathered up and left. I was just by myself, but they didn't want to be around me. But I, after this conversation, it's really shifting my perception. And I think how we need to look at, especially the women in those communities who are, may have been indoctrinated in this way of thinking and don't know anything any different. And so what would you say to people if we do encounter someone from one of these communities?
Love, love, love. I mean, just love and just let them see that we're not so scary. That we're actually, they've been taught that we're out to get them and the boogeyman and all that kind of stuff. So if just with a smile, you know, it just could be enough.
Wow.
You know, just like one girl I met up in Colorado City, I offered her a Red Bull. She never was on the show or anything, but she opened so many doors for me, and we shared a Red Bull. You know, it was just like dumb things like that. Not that that always happens, but we can all smile. We can all say, oh, your dog's cute, or, you know, and that's what they need. Just that little bit of, whoa, well, she doesn't seem so scary. And so then when they're, you know, and that builds upon, if you talk to these women, these boys, these kids, they'll say that all, the first time they started questioning was when an outsider was nice. A lot of times they'll say that.
Wow. So we have more of an impact in this situation than we may think.
Yes, and people say, what can I do? I'm like, be kind, be nice, just show a little. I mean, you have no idea what your influence may be doing. Mm-hmm. And we can all do that.
Yeah, something we can all do.
Yes, we can all do mm-hmm. that.
Wow. Again.
I'm smiling again. Yeah.
Tawny, if there's anything that you would want the world to know about everything about your work, about the women who are still trying to get out, about the community who's fighting for all of those women? What would it be?
Keep fighting. My gosh, the ones that are questioning, keep asking questions. I mean, just keep fighting, keep asking questions. And I want law enforcement to believe these women when they come, you know, what they're saying is, it just seems so far out there, and it isn't. It's happening. And I want them to be believed. And I'm grateful for organizations like Hope After Polygamy, where they're giving education, and the Diversity Institute, I think it's called Diversity, where they're actually helping educate so many of these refugees that are coming out of these communities and helping them. I can't say enough.
We'll put a link to those organizations that you talked about in the show notes so that people can look into that. Thank you for joining us today and sharing your story and giving us just a little bit of insight. I think everybody.
Thank you for raising awareness, you know, yeah. And I would say to everyone, tell your story. You know, it really does help so many other people, even if it's just within your families or wherever you can tell your story matters. Mm-hmm. And it helps us all. It's inspirational. So
yeah, it also,
absolutely.
It also requires people like you who are patient enough for people to find their courage to then tell a story, because it takes patience.
She's just love. She's just loving.
She's just love. That's it.
She's just, that's all she's doing.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tom.
Well, we love you.
We
love
you
so much.
So much. Appreciate you.
Thanks for joining us on another episode of the Bold and Inspired Leaders podcast.
Keep making bold moves and leading inspired lives. See you next time.